I was sat out there musing about Tom's tomb, which got built for yesterday, and thinking, is it appropriate to have a tomb on the dais on, you know, before his? But then I got to thinking, well, actually, it's empty. It should be empty at the moment because he ain't in it. He hasn't got there yet. So actually, he's quite right, isn't it? Could have a tomb there, and it'd get filled later. And then get emptied again. Anyway, it's just something I was musing about this morning. We're going to take a look at the gospel reading this morning and perhaps add some details that are recorded for us in the same account in the other gospels. Because this is such an important part of the ministry of Jesus and his journey to the cross that it's actually recorded in all four gospels. With different sort of little details added in places. And our reading from the gospel leaves us with that sort of impression that the Palm Sunday journey of Jesus into Jerusalem starts with Jesus saying to his disciples, go and get me a donkey. But we need to go back a few weeks before that, because the whole event would not have had half the impact it did if Jesus had not previously raised Lazarus from the dead. And that in itself was a massive event, and it left all who experienced it totally, and there's only one word for it, gobsmacked. It was an event that took place only 30 minutes or so walk from Jerusalem uphill, at a funeral attended by many people who lived in Jerusalem. Can you imagine the effect of Jesus arriving at this funeral after most of it had taken place, the body had been placed in the tomb and the stone sealed, and Jesus said, take the stone away. Well, take the stone away. And then shouting, Lazarus, come out. And after a short delay, Lazarus came out, hopping along, all wrapped up in his burial linen. What a spine-tingling, scary moment for those who were watching and stood around, all there still in the mourning phase of the funeral. And then Jesus just says, unwrap him, let him go. As if it's an everyday event. Normal thing to happen. What an extraordinary experience when you think about it for those who are watching. Now, this raising of Lazarus caused at least six things to happen. In the eyes of all the witnesses, Jesus became an instant celebrity and a prophet of power and became known as the prophet from Nazareth. And the Sadducees decided to kill Jesus because they had to get rid of him. The Sadducees couldn't allow somebody to put their authority and power and what the Romans had in control of them at risk. Couldn't allow it. And the Sadducees stated that they wanted to arrest Jesus and ask for information about his whereabouts. The chief priest Caiaphas unknowingly prophesied about Jesus that it was better for one man to die for the people than for all the people to perish. And the Sadducees decided to kill Lazarus because he was all part of this, and it was just too much. And Jesus was forced to withdraw with his disciples to a more distant desert area, a village called Ephraim. And that was just because he raised Lazarus from the dead. Sometime later, Jesus brings his disciples back to Bethany from Ephraim, to the top of the Mount of Olives, And it's the 7-day Passover feast, 7 or 8 days, depending on what you think of it. Passover celebration in Jerusalem. And Jesus was set on going down to that Passover celebration because this was all part of his journey to the cross. And so Jesus issues that instruction, go and get me a donkey. Not just any donkey, a donkey that's never been ridden, a foal. A donkey you will find just where I tell you to find it. A donkey I have chosen. So Jesus was now seen as someone who was awesome. Someone who possessed and used God's power. The prophet from Nazareth. Someone who could raise the dead. Someone to be cheered and celebrated, someone to be in awe of, someone who had set the people of Jerusalem fizzing with expectation. Isn't he coming to the Passover? Where is he? Has anyone seen him? Little knowing that Jesus had planned such an entrance into Jerusalem that no one was going to miss him. This entry of Jesus into Jerusalem had been planned in detail by God the Father. And ever since the transfiguration event on that mountain and that heavenly planning discussion between Jesus, Elijah, and Moses, Jesus had been set on a planned course to Jerusalem and the crucifixion. This was Jesus' big entry into Jerusalem at Passover, and it was the coming of God to his temple. We hear from Zechariah, rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion, shout, daughter of Jerusalem, see, your king comes to you righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. A prophecy from the Old Testament. It must have seemed a strange request from Jesus when he asked his disciples to get the donkey. Because after all, Jesus seems to have walked everywhere. When he was with his disciples, he walked everywhere, often many miles. Sometimes even the length of Israel itself, from Caesarea Philippi to Jerusalem. Amazing distances they walked. And Jesus is nowhere, as far as I know, else, apart from here, recorded as riding on a donkey or riding on anything. The disciples rose to the challenge. And when they'd got the donkey, we're told that after putting their cloaks on it, they put Jesus on it. It's an interesting phrase in one of the accounts. They put him on it. Riding in a procession on a donkey was seen as a symbol of peace and humility. And Jesus was to enter Jerusalem as the Prince of Peace, not as a conquering hero on a horse. And often the new Roman governor to Jerusalem would arrive, and he would arrive in procession on a white horse as a conquering hero. That's how Pilate would have turned up into Jerusalem when he first came. But Jesus was going on a donkey, a symbol of peace. It almost seems that as if all those around Jesus at this time had been enveloped in a breakthrough of heaven onto earth, as Jesus rides that donkey down into Jerusalem. It's like a bubble of heaven has broken out on the way down. A very large crowd, we're told, that's what it actually says in one of the accounts, a very large crowd gathered, cheering and laying their cloaks in the road before him, some even bringing in palm branches from the fields to lay on the road. It wasn't easy to get a palm branch off. So that was some effort that was being put into this. It must have been an amazing scene. Imagine being involved in it and shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." So we're going to do it. You lot over here are going to say, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." Go on. "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." And you're going to say, "Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." Tell your disciples to stop all this praising, the Pharisees commanded. Rebuke them. Behave yourselves. Stop it. But the Pharisees were so far out of the heavenly loop that they totally missed that this procession down into Jerusalem was completely a God moment. Heaven was breaking through here and all creation was rejoicing. As Jesus pointed out to the Pharisees, if his disciples were to keep quiet, the stones will cry out. This wasn't just any procession into Jerusalem. This was God coming to his temple. This is the point when Jesus is described as weeping over Jerusalem on his way down. Weeping over Jerusalem and its people. The attitude of the Pharisees had summed it up, as Jesus says, "You did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." This was what the Jewish people had been waiting for centuries. The Messiah, as described in the book of Daniel, one like a son of man, entering Jerusalem in the glory of God through the gate of righteousness. As Daniel saw in his vision, he was given authority and glory and sovereign power, and all peoples and nations and men of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. Similar to what the angel Gabriel said to Mary. But Jewish authorities had totally missed the long-awaited moment. The Pharisees had missed it. As Jesus said to them, "It is hidden from your eyes." Jesus was weeping for all the destruction and the horror and the judgment that was to descend on Jerusalem and its people. And we know that that happened in 70 AD and again in 133 AD. And as Jesus had said of the destroyers, they will not leave one stone on another. And they didn't. The temple was flattened. We are told that Jesus' entry into Jerusalem stirred up the whole city. That's what the text says. Stirred up the whole city, which was overfilled with people for the Passover. And Jesus entered Jerusalem and went straight to the temple. Because after all, that was where all the people expected to find God. And Jesus did not disappoint them. There are some sobering lessons to be learned from the entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. And it's easy, very easy, to sit in judgment of the Pharisees and the Jewish authorities who just did not recognize the time of God's coming. Coming to them. But it's easy for us to be the same. It's so easy for us not to see when God has come to us and is at work in our lives and in our church. Excuse me. Sometimes it seems to be hidden from our eyes. It's all too easy to miss out in what God has so clearly laid before us on the journey. It's easy to hold back on our praise and our worship, and to miss out on the work of Jesus in our lives. I think we must always live our Christian lives with our spiritual eyes wide open. We must, as the Apostle says, the Apostle Paul, be constantly in prayer. All the time. Always in communication with our Heavenly Father. Determined to know his presence. Determined to know his presence with us, and to listen to him, and to go as he directs, and to speak as he gives us the words. I think at all times, though, we must remember to praise the Lord. Because if we don't, well, the very stones might just do it for us. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the name who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the name. Come on. Blessed is the name who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest. Keep the stones quiet.